Hello and welcome to another episode of This Particular Album Is Very, Very Important to Me. I'm Joel Spence.
And I'm Deborah Tarica. This is the podcast where we ask people we love to pick an album that is very, very important to them. And here we share their memories.
Great and not so great.
And emotional connections.
Great and also not so great.
And we all get to listen to it through their ears.
I just told her that to avoid making it sound like their rears.
But that's the listener's choice.
That's
the listener's
choice. They can listen through whatever they want to.
Thank you.
Yeah, whatever device
you
have.
It's not for me to say how people listen to this podcast. That's their choice.
Should we dive right into our segment?
Yes, I'm very excited about this one.
This particular song is very, very important to me. What do I have available to me? I have Dropbox available to me, so we should start with yours.
Okay. Okay, so the song I picked, this is a tangential, very tangential connection in my brain, a very bad A to C for the public, I would say, my song that I picked is I Am the City by ABBA. And my connection to this song is very, very important to me because I grew up. So I've talked about also knowing now my mom listens to this podcast entirely. So I have to be very careful about what I say.
When you robbed a bank.
But growing up, like, we didn't listen to a ton of music. Mm-hmm. It was very specific what we listened to, but ABBA was one of the bands that we listened to a ton. So growing up, I listened to ABBA. And then I've talked about Peter a bunch, my best friend I live with, that I share a dog with. It's very amicable. He's obsessed with ABBA. We had plans to, like, go to the ABBA Museum in Sweden.
The ABBA Museum?
Oh, there's an ABBA
know.
Museum. We have not been, and I don't know it, realistically, if he and I will ever go together at this point in our lives. But I just have a very special place in my heart for ABBA. But I'm connecting it because we're doing a musical today. We also grew up listening to Chess, the musical,
yes.
And musicals were very big in my house growing up. And I was, I'll get into that more later, but that is my connection with this song.
I don't think I've heard a bad ABBA song.
No.
It doesn't exist. And they're recording again.
Are they really?
Yes. And it is, like, crazy.
How could they not after the Mamma Mia deal?
I mean,
you have to come back.
Right.
That's leaving money on the table.
Yeah. I mean, they have more money than any. I mean, I can't imagine. They have, like, Big Bang Theory money.
Well, that's the biggest amount of money I can imagine.
Dude, you got Big Bang money.
Whoa.
This is great.
It's one of their, like, lesser known songs. I think it's on More ABBA Gold, another greatest hits, but that's the only album it appears on.
Really?
Like, it was recorded in the early 80s and then not.
It's kind of ballsy to put a new song on your greatest hits and say, like, nah, I'm calling my shot on this one.
Yeah, exactly.
It is, though, but, like, it's got, like, it's peak ABBA for me. It's, like, got everything. It's got rounds and they're singing over each other and it's, like, about the city and there's nonsense words in it.
I legitimately love, I have a real soft spot in my heart for bluegrass and Appalachian style music, and so much of that is in Around.
Yes.
And it's so I'm on board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other song I was debating about is the song, This Is I Am the City. The other song was I Am the Tiger. Which is also just a very weird, it's just them singing about being a tiger.
Same song, just subbed out word.
A little bit.
Fun pop is deeply underrated.
Yeah.
My big problem with A Star Is Born from this last year was it undervalues pop music by so much.
It's so serious.
He's mad at her because she's making pop now. Pop is great.
Yeah, and because we don't really like to timestamp, this could be any version of The Star
Is Born. When Chris Christopherson got really mad at Barbara Streisand for making a pop album.
We recorded this in the early 50s, full disclosure.
James Mason is freaking
out. Was he in the first one?
He was.
Yeah. I love him.
Please, God, let me be right about that.
We've got so many listeners at home just going, you fucking idiot.
You idiot.
You edited all of Grant's stuff out, except for this one moment.
A lot today. I'm gonna state facts. If I'm wrong, honestly, I don't care.
I think that's like the core of this podcast.
Fantastic.
Yes, exactly. Okay, mine is also has some pedigree connected to the album, the featured album. If I Can't Have You by Yvonne Elliman.
Oh, yeah.
Who is Mary Magdalene.
Yes, indeed. Oh, good. This is a good decision.
And I didn't, you know, once you wiki, you go, oh, where have I heard her before? And her voice is so incredible.
She a great singer?
Oh,
that's so fun.
This is a great song. What you're about to play, this is a terrific, like, disco song.
Yeah. Such a, and this is Barry Gibb.
Yeah.
Who wrote this, and God, they were hot at that time. They were just dominated the charts.
Off the top of your head, what year this song was?
77.
Okay, yeah. So that's actually like 7 years after Jesus Christ Superstar, and she's so good at this style of music.
So good. Mm-hmm.
Disco is another underrated genre.
Yeah.
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 Good ones have like these bluesy low moment lyrics, but the music is just sort of like
dancing all over
their problems.
Much of disco is like the sadness of the club closing.
Yes,
it's the last 20 minutes of dancing of the night, that tragedy that the night is ending. What disco is about.
It's all what happens when cocaine wears off.
Yeah, right?
God, I feel terrible.
The line for the bathroom is just so long because nobody wants to.
My heart is pounding, but I am sad.
Yeah. Am I strong enough to see you through? Go crazy is what I will do. If I can't have you, I don't want nobody, baby. If I can't have you, oh, oh, oh. If I can't have you, I don't want nobody, baby. If I can't have you, oh, oh, oh. Can you imagine being sober in the time of disco? It would be crazy.
I'm defending disco. Not the most fun music when you're sober.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the greatest.
You're already left out of the party.
It sounds like such a good time, and I'm just, you know, tapping my thigh at 4 in the afternoon.
Had to have been people in Studio 54 who were sober, who were like,
I don't know if that's true. Who was sober there? Name a person.
Well, Andy Warhol, I think, made a few appearances. He didn't drink a lot.
That's it. Andy Warhol. I bet he was annoying. I've always thought Andy Warhol would be a super annoying dude.
Like,
to
he
hang
just
out
walks
with.
And everyone goes, Andy's here.
Yeah, and then pulls up a Polaroid and takes a photo of you and makes millions of dollars off you.
I bet he was so superior and unfun.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad we got to the real point of this podcast. Fuck Andy Warhol.
Andy Warhol probably sucks.
All right, Andy Warhol walked into the room. Let's take a break. Hello, listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. If you're digging this podcast, please, please, please go to Apple Podcasts and rate and review. Deborah and I love doing this show, and good reviews help us continue to bring fun guests and great albums to you. Special thanks to those of you who already have rated and reviewed. You know who you are, we know who you are, and we're looking forward to reading some new ones. And now, back to the program. All right, so speaking of probably sucked, our guest, I don't know.
Honestly, my favorite intro. I'm the Andy Warhol of this podcast.
I like the probably.
I don't know what that means.
I mean, who knows? Whatever that means.
Grant O'Brien, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Actor, writer from College Humor.
Yes.
Do you hail from New York, or where do you hail from?
I hail originally from Columbus, Ohio, and then I moved to New York when I was 18 to go to theater school.
Tisch School,
the Tisch School of the Arts.
Yes, wonderful.
And then I lived there for about 10 years, and I moved to Los Angeles about 3 years ago to start writing for College Humor.
You moved for the job?
I moved for the job.
That's cool.
I moved for the job. I'd been looking for jobs out here for a while because I was ready to go.
Yeah.
I love New York and was ready to go, was ready to leave from it.
It's a, God, nothing makes me sound older than this. It's a young person city.
It is.
I'm so old.
No, it truly is.
I'm so old.
Like, I'm fine, you know, living it with a curtain dividing me and my roommate when I'm 24. Not in my 30s.
Yeah.
I can't do that in my 30s.
Having a kid now makes me go like, that's the people who live there that have kids are either like heroes or just
rich.
Very rich.
Or rich.
Or just like, what are you doing? I have friends that live there that have multiple kids, and it's like...
they're aging twice as fast.
It's crazy. Yeah. But they're also amazing for being where they want to be, doing what they want to do. But I'm far too lazy. I'm so lazy. I couldn't do it.
Now, I was always very jealous of kids that grew up in New York City. Like when I first got there, and they were, I was, you know, from Ohio, and they were like, I know how to ride the subway. You just slide your card. I guess I'm talking about the first week. I'm talking about the very first week, and they showed me how to use the subway. But no, they were just, they had these great, interesting lives that I was deeply jealous of. So I could see raising a kid there if only to raise this like worldly Andy Warhol-esque kid.
Speaking of Andy Warhol.
Yes. Grant.
Tell us about your, what did you pick?
Yes, I picked an album that is very, very important to me, apropos of the podcast.
Outstanding.
I picked the original cast recording of Jesus Christ Superstar. And I want to be clear off the bat, this is not my favorite musical.
Okay.
It's a great musical, but it's not my my favorite.
Okay.
However, I think it's the most important musical to me because it was my... like it was my gateway drug for musicals.
Ah.
I went to a Catholic school when I was a kid, and was a closeted gay boy at a Catholic school who
so fun.
It was
so
great.
Fun.
It was awesome. It was so good.
Uncomplicated.
It was out of the gate, working out great. And I didn't know how much I needed musicals when I was a young kid until I started playing with my dad's records until I got to be like 8 years old is right around when I found this. And my dad had the record of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Nice.
And I would put that on. And because I think because it was a story I knew from being Catholic.
Right.
I could get right into it. I knew who all the characters were.
Yeah.
So it was just about the music and the theater of it. I directed this show in my head 10 times before I ever saw it live. When I was like 12 years old, I started like staging it in my head.
Amazing.
So what year was this for you?
This would have been, let's see. This would have been about 1995, 96, somewhere in there.
Did you have access to the movies that were made?
Yes,
or...
yes. Once I started listening to it, and my dad knew that I was into it, he said, like, oh, great, I love this show. Let's do this, my man.
That's so fun.
And so he, we went to the public library. I remember this day. It was like early morning on the weekend. We went to the downtown public library, and we got the Norman Jewson movie from like 1973, I want to say, on VHS.
I watched it two days ago.
It's a great movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's so interesting. 70s.
Definitely.
We'll dig into the movie a little bit. Yeah, a little bit, I'm sure. But like, I got it when I was a kid, and I remember watching it with my dad. And him being so excited about it, and that was such good permission to start getting into like music and musicals.
Mm-hmm.
Was your dad coming of age? Like, was he peak? I don't know, peak what?
My dad saw the original production on Broadway.
Yeah,
so he was like, my dad.
Was he a hippie? Like, was he?
Oh, I don't think he was
70s?
Cool enough to be a hippie. I think my dad's a nerd. He might listen to this. So, but I think my dad's kind of a nerd.
Yeah.
But he, I remember he tells the story a lot. He rode his bike to New York City with his twin brother to see this on Broadway.
Amazing.
It's
wow.
Just so I can picture it. Identical twin or fraternal?
Fraternal twin.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Oldest of 11. Oldest of 11, you know, Catholic kids.
Whoa.
And so I think this musical really got to them too.
Yeah.
It's such a good show. Guys, this is such a good show.
This makes me so happy. And also, I feel like you truly honored the premise of the podcast, where it's not your favorite necessarily, but it's just very, very important to you.
Yeah.
And
it's very important to me. And it keeps coming up in my life because it was so important to me when I was a kid. And then I've been in it three times. I've been in three different productions
really?
Of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Do you sing? Are you a singer?
I do. I sing. So there's a part in the show, Caiaphas. And
yes.
Don't worry, I'll really highlight it when we get to the songs.
Good.
And it's the only part in all of musical theater that I can sing. Because I'm
pretty
a
low.
Bass. It's a it's a low part.
Okay.
And that's not that fun to listen to. Like, you can't. You don't want to listen to a whole show of somebody singing like way down here. That gets really old.
I'm a big fan of The National, so I I don't know.
Yeah. Believe me, me too. That's the stuff in my car. I don't have to pitch down a whole bunch.
Yeah.
This is my favorite part of the show. This guitar riff.
Yeah.
Oh, this guitar riff fucks. This is so good.
I feel like it like it's like. You're in it. Like, it just, like, gets you excited for the whole thing.
Yeah, there's so much urgency in these first three tracks. I can see where we
all soon will be. I remember when I was a kid feeling so smart, realizing that they repeat this musical phrase as Judas is starting on his journey.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, musical theater. That's how musical themes and repetition works in the theater.
Right.
But I figured it out myself.
Yes,
I didn't
you did.
Need
yes.
anyone to explain
so
it to
so good
me.
When you can figure that out, honestly.
It's so good. You started to believe the things that serve you. You really do believe this talk of God is true.
And all the good you've done will soon get swept away. You've begun to matter more.
The fact that they start a whole show about Jesus and the first viewpoint is Judas is such an interesting choice.
Judas is this show. Like, Jesus drives the action, but Judas is who this show, to me, is about.
Yeah.
And I think that was something else that really hooked me. Being a little queer kid, I can't keep calling myself that, but being a little queer kid.
You can, but we can't.
That's true. They're just for clarification. Don't you dare.
I'll surprise you with it somewhere.
I'll pop it in there. Oh God, I'm going to make a jerk off motion while I say this. The narrative of Judas in this show is a queer narrative.
Because
this is a guy who is trying to do his best, and failing in the eyes of God. You know, growing up and going to the Stations of the Cross, I don't know how Catholic anybody is here in the room.
Not at all.
Yeah, fantastic. But
very, very Jewish. Not very, but Jewish.
But sure. And also, I'm going to talk a lot about Catholicism for a guy who hasn't been to church.
I think that works, and Joel is 100% comedian.
Yes. I worship at the altar of think
it's
of a comedian. Think of a comedian.
Del Close. It's Del Close. Close. It's
Thank
always
you.
Del Close.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but no, I think that's. I'm so curious about the connection for you, like hearing this, going to Catholic school.
Yeah.
How? Because I can't imagine Catholics were thrilled with this.
Catholics that were deeply opposed to this when it first came out.
There's somebody missing in the whole story that's very important to Catholics, isn't there?
God?
Mom?
Yeah. Mary, the mother of Jesus, was present at the crucifixion, according to them. According to those people.
And the only time you hear about is at the end of this when Jesus says, "Where is my mom? Who is my mom?"
Who is my
mother?
Like, yeah.
That's the first we've heard of that there was one in this story.
Man, somebody go find that kid's mom.
I mean, what? Moms aren't important.
They're
Let's
not.
Let's just get that out there right
They're
now. Moms
not.
Are not important. They do nothing.
Not in 70s male-driven musicals.
Not at all.
For sure.
Not really not all that. Didn't come up all that much. Not a ton of great parts for women.
One woman in it? Yeah.
There's another woman that has three lines that always gets very high billing when this production gets mounted, because it's like, we've got to
elevate.
We've got the Maid by the Fire is the name of the character, and we have to, we've really got to bump this part up here. But one of the productions I was in was in a Catholic church, which I think, you know, this musical was right around like Vatican II era when the Catholic Church was liberalizing. And when
as much as they could at
as
the
much
time.
As you know, that super liberal organization, we got the cool Pope now, but it was coming into the priests before literally were facing away from the audience, the crowd. I don't they were like talking to the big crucifix at the back of the church.
Wow.
All in Latin. And you know,
very
it was right around this time when they said, "Hey, turn around and talk to people, and maybe make them feel like they're it's a good thing that they're here at church." I did a show actually in Ohio after my freshman year of college, just a little production at this theater in Ohio. Then I was in it again in college at NYU. Just a garbage production.
But still, I'm sure so fun.
It was so much fun. It was directed by a voice teacher who is like a big deal vocal coach and not a particularly good theater director. After every song, there was a full blackout and scene change. And there's like 30 songs in the show. So the show, it was like a full hour of darkness.
That's
while people
crazy.
Are moving, like shifting things around on stage.
And you were always playing the same part.
I played the same part. I played Caiaphas the Elder.
Amazing.
In the show a bunch. Then I was in another concert version in a church, and that was so good. Because I think you were talking about the band before. We just had this great backing band, really pared down, you know, just, you know, 5-piece band with these amazing, like, Broadway singers that just liked the show and wanted to do it for a little bit.
The whole idea that this exists in the first place is strange.
The story of the show is awesome.
Like, they made this album almost as an official proof of concept.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
They'd written this, and they hired, actually the band playing is Joe Cocker's backup band.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I think they're called the Grease Band.
So
you have these great, like, rock musicians playing these, not musically not terribly complicated themes, but just because of that, really putting some English on it. Like, really, like, you know, that.
Yeah.
Anyway, now I'm getting, now
no,
I'm getting
I love
excited
it.
About
and
it.
But this is like what this should be.
I was so surprised that it's Ian Gillan, who's Jesus, who's
the lead of Deep Purple.
Yeah, lead singer of Deep Purple, Smoke on the Water. And that's another sort of random thing that happened when they made this album. They just grabbed these rock and roll singers and people who were in Hair.
Yeah.
And
Murray Head,
Judas,
they pulled off the London cast of Hair.
Yeah.
Honestly, they probably just borrowed a little of his time. I don't think they had to have him leave the show.
He's the voice in One Night in Bangkok.
Yes.
The spoken part
it's
of that.
It's like all...
He is. Synergy? I didn't know that.
That's what
is
made...
That Synergy? I don't
yeah.
know.
it's Tim Rice, Synergy. The muses, but to let her stroke you, kiss your hair. And I think I also read that Ian Gillan, did everything, all of his parts, in 3 hours, in one session.
Did he really?
That's so crazy.
And so he probably was like, it's a gig.
That's so wild, because that's such a hard part to... I mean, I guess if you can do it, that's one of those parts that you can either do or not.
Yeah.
Like, if it's in your range,
I
great,
can
you can
do
it.
It
let's hear.
No.
Okay. It can be done very easily as a concert because it did start as an album.
Right.
It feels more like a concert.
It does.
I watched the John Legend version in preparation for this because I had never really heard this or seen it before, just in full disclosure. And it felt more like a concert than it was like a production.
So many of these songs were singles back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And you know, got popular just as pieces of music.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not a ton of songs with like where it's a dialogue back and forth.
Right.
It's like there's a whole bunch of solos in this show. It feels I'm going to do a jerk off motion again here. It feels prayer-like in a lot of ways because these characters are very alone and wrestling with these big issues.
Oh, you're right.
Which again as a half smart 12-year-old really really was thrilled when I realized that. All right, yes, everything's fine, and we want you to sleep well tonight. Let the world turn without you tonight. If we try, we'll get by, so forget all about us tonight. Everything's all right, yes, everything's all right, yes. Sleep and I shall soothe you.
My first like real introduction to, I mean, I've heard about it for years, and it's just part of the culture of this musical, but I don't really know about it. Was a friend of mine wanted me, she does this show in North Hollywood where it's all like Broadway numbers, but performed by people that would never be cast in that
cool.
part. And she asked me if I would be interested in playing bass for What's the Buzz, and
great song.
And What's the Buzz, and
Tell Me What's Happening, and What's the Buzz. Well, and then it goes into Strange Thing Mystifying.
And she wanted me to play bass for it. I was like, sure, how hard can it be? And then I listened to it, and it's all bass.
It is, yeah. That's a lead bass number.
Yeah, and so that was my first like kind of taste of just that band that they hired to play this, and just the style of it. And it was so fun, and well out of my reach.
That it didn't go particularly
well. I just felt like I was chasing it the entire time.
Sure.
But it was just me, a piano player, and this cast of people who were just having a great time.
Oh, wow.
So it worked out really well. But
yeah,
I was just
that
like...
Those, a number of times does the bass drive this.
Yes.
It's really cool instrumentation. It's like not the most complicated things in the world, but really, really cool parts.
Yes.
I played in the church version. I played the pipe organ for a couple of numbers.
Oh, wow.
Because,
cool.
You know, with the cast, the band, but then anything extra the cast would do.
Yeah.
And that took practice. I'm not very good.
You're not a natural with the pipe organ? That's fucking crazy.
I know. And I just bought one for my apartment to practice with, just in case it comes back up. For the fire in your head
feet. Close your eyes. It's so groovy. It's so groovy.
Groovy is a great word for it.
It's
like it does a lot of it grooves.
Yeah, and this song is beautiful.
This is a great song.
This was the only one I really knew because the Indigo Girls did a cover of it.
Oh, really?
Of course.
I
heard that. That's cool.
I think there's like a album. I'm sure there's multiple albums of like just covers of this by rock stars and stuff. And Indigo Girls are obviously rock stars in my book.
They are. The Indigo Girls.
I mean,
great. I love the Indigo Girls.
They're my favorite. So, like, I knew this song. I had it on, like, a mix CD that, like, my best friend and I listened to driving somewhere.
It's sort of a five-act show. Like, yeah. Before intermission, it's sort of divided into three acts, and this, to me, sort of finishes act one. Like, you get all the story, you get, like, here are our leads, here's what they're about, and then we're about to get into act two, where now that's all going to get complicated by Caiaphas the Elder and his merry men.
Yes. This musical is pretty much about Caiaphas, right? That's how you play it.
I Caiaphas love playing Caiaphas superstar. So much because it's such a... The college production I was in was, again, had these... It was a bunch of musical theater kids who are my people. But everybody would be on, like, vocal rest all the time because it's a hard show to sing for a lot of people. Mm. Yeah. And Caiaphas just sits right there for me. Caiaphas is just like, I can, like, let's go. We've got to go drink after this.
You're smoking right before you walk out on stage.
It literally helps. It literally makes it. It makes me better at singing that part if I just smoke some cigarettes. We're about to get into it.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, now at this point in the show, you see my figure walking across. A raised platform backlit by blue, flowing robes behind me.
Wow. Is he sort of the bad guy, or?
Fully the bad guy.
Yeah. Gentlemen, you know why
we are here. We've not. Actually, that college production I was in got some blowback because for being kind of anti-Semitic, which is valid because in the show, everybody was in modern garb except for the high priests who were dressed super Jewish. Like, we had these, like, stick-on payases.
Oh, yeah.
And they had us play it way evil. Which, this is an evil... This is no nuance to this character.
Yeah. No, yeah.
I was thinking about that in listening to it, like... Because this also triggered me going back and re-listening to Joseph.
Mm,
and
the amazing
Technicolor Dreamcoat. And, like, I didn't even know... Like, I grew up... listening to Joseph and like the new production of that, like
yes.
that had come out, a bunch of kids from my world were like in the show because they like pulled kids from LA and I grew up in LA and
Donny Osmond?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think I thought it was like I thought it was Jewish and it's not. Neither of this definitely isn't, but I thought it was like the production because it was because it was like kids from my temple and stuff doing it and like but I didn't realize and then listening to this I was like I don't like how they say Jew in it.
Yeah, they don't.
They like spit it and
they
I don't like it.
It's not great.
Yeah.
It's not like it's
very sneering.
The blowback is all valid because and really every character is redeemed. But the high priests, like it complicates these, like it complicates the narrative of Pontius Pilate, and then the high priests menace.
Yeah.
The high priests have this evil theme,
and even the Pontius Pilate heart of gold part seems a little forced to kind of balance that character out.
Truly.
It's like that guy was a fucking monster too.
100%. Now in the Norman Jewson movie, they write a song for two of the high priest characters that does. Complicate it a little bit.
Okay.
It's about the song. It's been a while since I've listened to that version, but it's about like we need strong rule. If there's not strong rule over people, there's chaos, and chaos
society.
Is unhelpful.
Yeah.
So it's they fear chaos rather than just losing power. But
sure.
That isn't in this.
Yeah.
No.
Well, yeah. What then
to do about this? I think on point that you described it that. It's just a bunch of prayers, and everyone's alone. And I never thought about this before, but it just feels like a bunch of people talking to people who aren't listening to them.
Yes.
Like, here's my point of view, and everyone's like, all right, here's mine.
Fully.
Yeah.
Fully. Which is...
Since there's no dialogue, there's no, like, character arc, really.
You get one moment of dialogue, really, in The Last Supper, which is the first song of the second act. Jesus and Judas sort of peel off to the side and argue. They don't ever come to much agreement with each other, which I think is probably a flaw in the show. I would love to see some moment of reckoning. You know, now that I say that, you kind of get it in Superstar, which is the big 11 o'clock number. You kind of get Judas sort of accepting his role and talking to Jesus about what he's done. Jesus doesn't talk back. So again, no dialogue here.
Right. And post his suicide when he's come down as an angel. Right?
That's right. Yeah. Which again was big for me as a young Catholic, you know, having Judas being the ultimate villain down in, like, there was a circle of hell for Judas Iscariot.
Right.
Having him be an angel who had a job to do, that he participated in this story.
Yeah.
And in the death of Christ is the story of Christ, and Judas just had a part to play in it.
Right.
Was...
a revelation,
very appealing to me.
Yeah.
As a kid who wanted there to be fairness in the world, to say, like, well, that's not fair.
Yeah.
What happened to Judas? He didn't have a choice in that.
Yes.
Did this affect you, like, on a religious level? Did it? Are you still practicing?
I'm not. My most religious moment as an adult, I was 23, and having the difficult year that everyone has when they're upwardly mobile and white and just graduated from a very expensive private school, and you know, and it's like, oh, now what do I do?
Yeah.
Now I have to go do the thing I was talking about all the time. And I was having a night, and I'd just gotten home from my my food runner job at a restaurant, and was scrolling through podcasts, and I came podcasts. This podcast is very, very important to me. There's another podcast. But I don't remember how I landed on one, but I landed on one that this Catholic priest did. I'm not going to remember the order of Catholic priests, but one that's big on education.
Okay.
Not the Jesuits, but something similar.
Okay.
They just got me on the right night that I sent this priest an email. And I said, listen, I grew up Catholic. I'm missing something in my life right now. The church does it for a lot of people. Now, I don't know if I believe in God, and there's a lot of stuff in the Catholic Church that I'm hard not down with, and the Catholic Church is not down with me.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something there for me? I said it longer than that.
Yeah.
And he got back to me and said, why don't you come to the church? He was in New York.
Oh.
And he said, come up here. Let's have a chat. And so later that week, I went up there and sat down with him in his office for like an hour. And he said some great, a very valuable thing to me, which didn't make me believe in God or church. But he said, the most important part of religion is church. The most important part of it is people getting together in a room once a week and saying, this is hard. Let's all acknowledge that it's hard to be a good person and have each other's backs while we do it. You don't necessarily have to believe in God to say, it's hard to be good. Mm-hmm. I would like to be better.
Mm-hmm.
This place is about being a better person.
Yeah.
Mm. That was, wow. I thought, it was, yeah, there's, yeah, that guy was great. I wish I could remember his name or the name of his podcast or the name of the church, but...
Well, we don't promote that man. Podcasts
was,
what I like.
That's
here,
right,
so.
Yeah, we don't need that.
That man was John Paul II.
That's right, he got there. Yeah, I went to the Vatican too.
That man was Jesus
that
Christ.
That man was Jesus Christ himself.
Wow, so...
That's very profound.
Yeah, it was a great conversation.
How did it affect you moving forward then?
Oh, it didn't. It didn't really. Yeah.
But you believe that, or you
that I think is absolutely true.
Yeah.
I think that my relationship to religion is that religion is bad and church is good. Generally speaking, churches are a positive force in people's lives.
Yeah.
They give them like a social center.
Like
they give
that.
Them a
community. Yeah.
I mean, for me, it was like my first exposure to music. It was my first.
Yeah.
I was an altar boy. Church, and honestly, my Catholic school in general, considering I was a little gay boy, was fine. Like,
yeah.
I didn't get like the hard conservative, gay is bad. I don't.
Right.
I honestly don't remember them mentioning gayness at all. It was a.
Wow.
I got good education. I was.
Did you have
fine.
Friends that were in the same predicament? I guess.
I did.
Yeah.
We Well, I don't know. Look.
let's name them.
Yeah, right? I did. You would be surprised in my class of 28 how many friends I had in that same predicament.
Yeah.
Sure.
None of us figured out we were in the same predicament until,
God,
until
that, I guess that
years
was
later.
Yeah.
Although we should have based on things we were doing. But
without knowing that, those were like,
you can't believe
cues.
How good little gay boys get at sectioning off the part of their head that does that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
With their friends in their basement at a sleepover. Oh. Like, you can't it's I keep saying I'm a little gay boy. I'm bisexual. So frankly, I shouldn't be saying it either. It's not my word.
Also, yeah. Joel keeps saying it too.
Yeah. Yeah, off mic keeps like whispering it to me. It's really intense. I would like quiz myself when I was like 14 and be like, "Are you gay?" I'm like, "Well, no, I like girls, so mm-hmm. I'm not.
Right.
I really am not."
Right.
But I keep, but those basements at sleepovers keep it keeps coming up. I remember it being a huge relief when I said like, "Oh, I'm bisexual." Oh God. Okay. That
just having
makes
an answer for
sense.
It. Yeah.
There's
that
a thing,
tracks.
Yeah.
My poor Jerusalem. And I got that down doing musicals, like meeting other gay
sure.
kids. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's your church and community, I would
it
say.
Totally
like,
is.
Or,
yeah.
or you might say, I don't know.
Where I find my people, what church is valuable for is helping people find their people.
Yeah.
And where I find my people is in theater people. Is
yeah.
in
100%.
Comedy is my church.
I think about
for
that
sure.
all the time because, like, UCB is my church.
It
I
is.
I think because I, like, my parents met at the Jewish summer camp that I grew up going to. And, like, they met through our temple and through religion. That's how you met when you, in
yeah.
the 60s and 70s for a lot of people. And then for me, it's. And I don't belong to a temple now. I don't. I think of myself as Jewish, but more culturally than
yeah.
anything. And then it's comedy. It's UCB. That's my community. That's mm-hmm. my gathering place. That's where I met my person. That's what, you know, like.
Absolutely.
You very rarely find the haunting hunted.
Is it possible that church is just a place for adults to make friends? And,
I don't know.
I say that glibly, but that's very valuable.
But the way your 100%. Phrasing of it of just religion is bad, church is good is like mm-hmm. the most succinct version of that I've ever heard and the most correct version I've ever heard.
It's jerk off for you. So do make
yeah.
a jerk
off. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I was. I was. Mom,
yeah,
I,
sure,
was.
Sure, sure.
I was.
And next.
Joel, are you a musical guy? Do you like musicals?
Yes. I wouldn't call myself that. So, like, there are people who are very much
a musical guy.
Like
yes.
that. Like, who. Like.
He doesn't define you.
Yeah, like previous guest, John Ross Bowie, he is definitely a musical fanatic.
Yeah.
As well as
it's
a fanatic of.
It's a nerddom
yeah.
that you
yeah.
can go deep on.
Yeah.
yeah.
And then I heard them mentioning my name and leaving.
Even people that aren't really musical people, there are things for them. I mean, Hamilton
yeah.
is, I think, a great example. Hamilton, yeah. Of which I can draw a lot of parallels to Jesus Christ Superstar
sure.
in that it redeems a historical villain.
Right.
You know, that's Aaron Burr's show, the way this is Judas Iscariot's
yeah.
show.
Right, right, right.
It's about the historical dialogue between
mm-hmm.
these two powerful people.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, there aren't that many great parts for women. You know, lots
yeah.
of there's some problems
yeah.
here.
I mean, there weren't great parts for women in history. Let's just say women
that's,
didn't exist
didn't,
in history.
Didn't come up all that much.
Women
right.
weren't in history, so
right.
we shouldn't.
When those priests finally,
I don't know why they keep asking for parts and things.
When those priests finally turned around and they're like, "Oh, there's women here."
Wow, we've been making idiots out of ourselves. I hope they speak Latin.
Yeah. I was surprised to know I associate Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber together to such a degree. I assumed they had worked on way more projects than they actually
did.
Yeah,
not did. A lot.
Four or so, maybe a couple that didn't make it. But
yeah.
Fun story about that. There's a song in the second act, King Herod's song, that they just fully lifted from another show they
it
wrote.
Wasn't it a Eurovision song?
It was. Yeah.
Like
it
that?
Was. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. They wrote it for Lulu.
Oh, that's fun.
It was called Try It and See. And they said, like, well, that was pretty good, and it didn't go anywhere. Let's just jam that right in here.
Well, that's...
That's also my ABBA connection. Eurovision. I was thinking about that.
Eurovision is great.
It's
Eurovision,
so fun.
As just as a concept and in the history of music, has been this incredible force.
It's very cool. This song is so fun.
Oh, here we go.
Fun.
Yeah. This song is so much fun and also not at all funny. It gets called like comic
brutal.
Relief a lot, but there aren't jokes really.
It's sort of trying to do what a lot of the songs in cabaret successfully do in that genre, but this is different.
I have musical comedy is so hard to do.
Yes,
because it just so much of comedy is timing, and your timing is dictated by the rhythm.
Right.
And so you really just have to rely on, you know, a clever phrase.
Mm-hmm.
You run into cleverness more than funniness a lot in musical comedy.
Yeah. I would even say this is more fun than funny, because
this
isn't even clever.
It's not really.
The rhyming is very simple. It's fun, though.
I think he tries to rhyme fraud and lord towards the end.
He does.
Which I'm like, the way his accent he uses sort of gets there. But...
Yeah, like you have to really be English to do this.
Although in the live version... Alice Cooper doing this is pretty fun.
It's fun.
He's just having a blast, but
that live version was fun. That was fun. I thought John Legend was you know what's actually very affecting in that live version was the crucifixion scene, which is usually I don't love that scene as an end to this show because it's sort of like that's really a soft landing for what is a musical.
Yeah. I really kept, like, even in listening to it, I kept hoping they'd turn it around.
Yeah, like...
like it'd have a different ending,
yeah,
which
there'd
is
be
very
some,
silly.
Well, a big Catholic objection to this show when it first came up is it shows the death of Christ, but not the resurrection of Christ, which is the important part for Catholics. Otherwise, it's just some dude.
Yeah. Who goes, where's my mom? Who is she?
Oh, so sad.
I think that might be his... Oh, no, that's not his last line of the show. He says, it is finished.
It is... Oh. Which, that's his cue for the
accurate.
Curtain.
Yeah.
it's finished.
So I was listening to that King Herod song over and over, and the melody was like, I know this is from something else that I know very well, but I couldn't. And it's not the most original. Like I think it's been done.
Yeah.
And this connects a little bit to the accusations of plagiarism that have been dogging Andrew Lloyd Webber for.
Sure.
But this was one of his first, so. I do
this
not.
This is the original accusation of plagiarism.
It's not a big deal for him to plagiarize himself. So the fact that he's reusing a melody is like, of course you do that. But then I finally figured out where I've heard it before.
This is my church.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Leave the tables when you Billy Joel's Don't Ask Me Why. Don't Ask Me Why.
What year was Don't Ask Me Why?
Ooh, good fucking question.
I want to say it was later than this, though.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think it was like 1980.
It would have had to have been. Billy Joel wasn't doing anything.
Yeah.
He was in Oyster Bay, you know. I don't know what he did when he was young. Probably do it. He was
worked
fine.
Worked the docks.
He was a dock worker. 1980, yeah. 1980.
Billy Joel's great. Billy Joel is another.
I think someone described him as Broadway rock, and I was like, that is exactly right.
I think it was Anthony King.
Yes.
had a tweet that like so many people think they're rock fans. So many Billy Joel fans think they're rock fans, but actually they're musical fans. That's paraphrasing somebody else's tweet.
Yes. No, but it's that's I you it, said that I was like that does feel familiar, and you saying that made me go, yep, that was Anthony's tweet.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's got nothing to say. Get out, you. This is like. I wish the whole thing was this.
Yeah.
Can I just say that? Because I enjoyed this. I think there's a reason why I never gravitated towards this one. Probably the religious aspect. But
do you have a favorite musical?
I have a lot. Oh, that's such a good question. Because I grew up, I was so lucky. My parents exposed us really early. We went and saw Cats.
Yes.
When I was little. And if just a fun side note, if you have the opportunity to just go like YouTube, anything from Cats, it's so ridiculous to watch.
Oh man, people
like
should go see Cats if they can get cheap tickets. If don't spend a lot, but go see Cats at some point. It's weird.
It's so weird. And but just watching the YouTube video of is it Jellicle Cats?
Jellicle
Cats. It's so fucking weird.
Yeah.
You should get high and watch that because it's so absurd. It's humans dressed as, it's just, I mean, I don't have to explain Cats, but it's just
I still like musicals, yeah. And I think I'm a relatively intelligent person. I've seen Cats. I don't know what it's about. I couldn't describe the plot to you.
I've never seen it. I've only heard memories or whatever. Yeah. But I have been constantly asking, what is this thing about? And it's nice
just
to know
based off a poem,
that there's
which is,
nothing.
I mean,
I don't know. And I've seen it. And I...
My other exposure to it, excuse me, in a way, was the Miami Sound Machine video of Bad Boys, because they all dress as cats from that. They look like, it's like an homage to Cats.
Yeah.
And it's, that, the narrative of that music video makes perfect sense, but that's the only other,
it's
my knowledge of
Cats. It's
weird
that you bring that up, because I think there's, because there's also, for Three Men and a Baby, the main song is Bad Boys by Miami Sound Machine.
Okay.
Which is the same song, yeah, I think, yeah. But the video is very different than the one that I saw, because I went back and rewatched this recently because it's a very ridiculous video. It's a very ridiculous song. I don't know. It has nothing to do with
that. The narrative
anything,
of 3 Minute Baby is actually the story of Cats.
Oh!
That's how I just didn't see it
now
through
see
the
it.
Costumes.
That was the first one I remember ever going to see. They, and I think it's Rum Tum Tiger comes into the audience. He picked my sister out of the audience to dance with.
Mm.
And then we were very little for this. Oh. But like, we went and saw a bunch of musicals. We went and saw that and like Les Mis and Phantom. And I was very lucky to like do that. And then they'd bring, my parents would go, they went to London and saw like Starlight Express, yeah, and Chess, and brought back the soundtrack. So we just, I don't know if I have a favorite. It's such a good question.
It's, well, because favorite,
I love them.
Well, sort of like a favorite and most important,
yeah,
are different, because, yeah, like it can be super important to you, yeah, when you get it young. Like my favorite musicals are Sondheim musicals that I would have hated, that I probably heard and did hate when I was a kid.
Totally.
But now that I'm, you know, in my 30s and relating to people who are having trouble and, yeah, like finding someone to fall in love with, it's like,
right,
oh, okay, now that's there.
Yeah.
But those early musicals. Andrew Lloyd Webber writes great musicals for
so,
that.
Yeah.
Like, Phantom is great for a kid.
Like,
yes,
the first musical type,
yeah,
thing. Yeah.
It's really cool.
I remember I was in London in 2000, and Andrew Lloyd Webber, my dad went with me, and Andrew Lloyd Webber had a new musical about soccer, and I'm a huge soccer fan, and I was like, well, we got to go see this.
How could we not?
And it wasn't a Tim Rice show, and... it was so cheeseball, and I remember kind of getting angry because it was bad. It wasn't good. It wasn't great. I love soccer. There was a lot of good things about it, but it was so corny, and I was so mad because I was getting chills because the music, he just knows what to do emotionally,
yeah,
with music. And I was simultaneously hating and being like getting emotional with everything,
yeah,
in the musical.
That's the greatest trick musical theater can pull.
Yes.
It's like, oh, here's a chord progression that will get to you.
Yes.
And I mean, Les Mis, I think, is a great example. Like the, yeah, music in that show is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And as a show, it's probably not a good sign that every number ends with the whole cast standing at the front of the stage,
yes,
singing as loud as they can. I don't think that's my line. I think I'm quoting someone with that. But there's,
yeah,
it's probably not a great...
Yeah.
Great way,
yeah,
to go.
And it, I immediately thought of, when you were talking about comedy and musical, particularly in drama, like dramatic musicals, my least favorite part is the Master of the House moment.
Yeah, when
moment.
It's trying to be cute,
yeah,
and
I
fun.
Get it. I get how funny. I get it's a relief. But I'm sort of waiting for the drama.
Yeah, get back
done.
To get
it's,
back to the show.
It's
heartbreak.
A, you don't need
here.
Release.
No.
Relief.
Need him crucified. It's all you have to do. We need him crucified. It's all you have to do.
I went to London. When I
and
was
then we'll
in
do
college,
a London story from you after this.
by myself. And I was like 20. I was just about to turn 21. And I was like, it was at the tail end of a trip.
Mm-hmm.
I was ready to go home. And I was like, what am I doing here by myself? It was a very weird thing, like, because being so young and I was staying in a hostel and I didn't want to like be out at night. So I just went and saw a bunch of musicals,
yeah,
by myself. And I saw like The Lion King, which was amazing.
Tim Rice.
Then, yeah.
That's a Tim Rice. That's
and
right.
Then, and then I saw Fame. there, oh, wow. And it was awful, and it was so bad, and I still remember how bad it was, and it was like
Tim Rice. No, Tim Rice.
But it just—I think there's something about, maybe it's because there's stories that go with it, or for whatever reason, like musicals. I just remember like every single one, and where I was, every single one where I heard them first, and like the experience of going to the theater. Maybe it's an experience more than it is.
Going to even if it's not a musical, just going to the theater. I remember most of the plays that I've seen. Like if I like dig back and be like, oh, what was that show? Like I forget every movie, but plays stick with you because you're there and you're sitting watching it.
I would have thought it would have been lame, but I think I loved it growing up. I don't know if that sentence made sense, but it's something I really want to do for my daughter. Where like. I want to take her to the theater. I want her to experience it, and I hope she doesn't think it's lame because I can see that.
Taking your kid to the theater must be cool. Great. That's got to be.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I went to New York. My mom took me and my brother's like a year younger than I am, and we went to the TKTS booth and just got tickets to something.
Yeah.
And it ended up being this show called Take Me Out, which is it's a great play. I think Richard Greenberg. It's about the first out gay baseball player in Major League Baseball.
Oh wow!
And it's a big nude scene, right?
It's only nude scenes. They're taking showers and having sex with each other all the time.
You're there with
and
your
I'm
mom.
I'm sitting there at like 17 next to my mom. Like they have to put clothes on. If they don't put clothes on, I'm going to leave. This is. We didn't have any idea what the show was. No. Like this has to change.
That's
this can't.
Amazing.
We can't just keep doing this, fellas. You gotta get dressed.
That is so funny. Talking about this over the 27, 28.
Yeah, right. Yeah, over the 39 lashes of Christ.
30.
Why 39?
There, I believe this is correct. At 40, it was generally assumed that a person would be dead. Like at 40 lashes was a death sentence at the time. No one could survive that, and so Pilate gave him the maximum
heart of
gold.
Someone,
yeah, this redeemed character, who isn't Jewish, gave him the maximum sentence he could without it being a death sentence before he finally gave him a death sentence.
Wow.
And if I'm wrong about that, I again don't care. It again doesn't matter all that much to me.
Is there another song that we've sort of skipped over?
We're coming up on Superstar, which was the biggest hit of the show.
Yeah.
And should honestly be at the end. Should honestly, after this song, they should go to the Crucifixion, and then they should do Superstar, and that should be the end of the show.
Yeah.
You know, musical structure. What are we doing here?
Yeah, yeah. Let's remind everybody that everything is just fine. Yeah.
Everything works out. Look, the whole cast is dancing together.
Right? Judas is back.
You know, he came down from the ceiling.
Nobody's thirsty anymore.
No, that's the other weird part.
So thirsty.
I'm so thirsty!
Mom, can I have a glass of water?
Yeah. And who is she? Where is did I have one?
This scene in the Norman Jewson movie, which everyone should see as just a piece of like 70s cinema. They went to Jerusalem and filmed it.
Oh, wow.
And the like sub-narrative of the show is that the actors all go there on like the school bus, because it was the 70s and that's how you did musicals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They all get there at the beginning and they all get into their costume. And it's like, oh, we're doing this show. And then at the end, the actors all like look worried and all get back on the bus and leave Ted Neely, the guy playing Jesus by himself, who has become Jesus, I think, in the narrative of this Norman Jewson movie. I love Norman Jewson.
And there's a couple of people who stop at the bus and sort of turn.
They turn around. Yeah, Yvonne Elman turns around. Yes. Carl Anderson, who's playing Judas, who's great.
Oh my God.
Carl Anderson is phenomenal.
It's worth
watching it. I'm sorry. I only had time to watch the live one. I was telling Joel, I just didn't have time to rent it, and I knew it would take me multiple days to watch it.
Well, when we were talking about doing the show, we went like you had sent me a couple of versions of the show. Like,
yeah.
Is this the one you mean? Is this the one you mean?
There's so many.
There's so many recordings
of
this show.
Yeah.
There was just one on Broadway that, like, after I moved here, like they just brought it back. It's never not someplace.
Yeah.
Right.
Watching this versus watching Fiddler on the Roof, which was also Norman Jewson in the 70s.
Yeah.
It's such a like it's very, very clearly the same director, and he just does so much more weird stuff in this. Like Fiddler is like, hey, why don't I tell the story?
Pretty
of
straightforward,
which is great.
And the marriage of modern and ancient and 70s.
Yes.
Is like they're colliding all the time in a way that only 60s and directors in the 60s and 70s, only they took risks like this.
Yeah.
There's something so that era for this.
It's such a 70s piece, but it's still very affecting. Like,
yeah. I fall for that actor thing, I think, every time. Like, I just like watching the actors come in and then put on a show, get lost in the show, and then they just put it, you know, the curtain comes down, everyone goes home after. I love that every time it happens.
Yeah.
The fact that there's these fighter jets all of a sudden, and the tanks are just so abrupt, because up until that point, they are performing, the set is ruins, basically.
Yeah. Right?
There's no modern set, or it's probably a set that they just made to look like
ruins.
Sure,
but it looks like, yeah.
So it's a very strange...
It feels so of a piece with, like, Hair or Godspell, I think, is a very, you know, another 70s musical doing the story of the Bible. It's like, hey, we're just people putting on a show.
Yeah.
That's not in Hair, but the aesthetic is very similar.
Right.
That 70s movie of Hair is another great, like, 70s movie musical.
I've never seen it.
It's great. It has a lot of that, like, 70s...
It's like peak 70s. There's nothing more 70s than those things.
Yeah.
That's a very specific statement that I've just made.
There's so many nothing good movie more musicals 70s from the 70s. Than that. There's my favorite movie musical of that is All That Jazz that Bob Fosse.
Just about to say.
Yeah. Is such a good, and has that, like, we're doing a show for you, and so many of the musical numbers.
Yes. It's self-conscious. It's like, this is a movie, very much a production. We're not trying to be so realistic. There's cutting that fourth wall all the time.
The end of All That Jazz is the ego that Bob Fosse has to make a movie about his own death that ends with everyone he's ever known applauding him as he's being sung to death by Ben Vereen.
Yeah, you can imagine in the editing bay when Fosse is like saying, "Yeah, so I want all the let's finish on everyone applauding me." The editor's like, "Are you sure?" Okay, all right.
Well, hey, I mean, sure.
Yes,
why not?
It must be.
Do you have a favorite musical? You said this is important, but this isn't your favorite. Do you have a favorite, Joel? Do you have a favorite?
Today, I'm gonna say Assassins. Which is a Stephen Sondheim show about everyone who has killed or tried to kill a president of the United States.
Oh, wow.
Yep. And it's like this show, isn't necessarily redemptive of those characters, but is explores those characters, those people in a really, like, thoughtful way. The great songs also, like, this tends a lot of solos, a lot of, like, here's my number and here's what my exploration is gonna be.
That for some reason that like takes pressure off for me in watching it when it's like, this is your time, like with, is it King Herod, is that with that song where I'm like, he gets to just, like, kick back the whole time, everybody has to learn every cue, and he just goes, like, now
I got him,
this is my time
I can jump in,
and then he gets to go and, like, have a jacuzzi.
Yeah, it was like,
whatever.
I'm going to go have a jacuzzi.
That's pretty much what backstage at a Broadway theater is like, because, you know, jacuzzis everywhere.
I imagine that.
I think because I haven't seen Hamilton, I know,
Oh, you've got to go.
I also
you've
haven't seen
got,
Hamilton.
Oh, you've got to go.
Is the last one that like, relatively current musical that really blew me away was Book of Mormon.
Book of Mormon is so good.
I did see that.
Book of Mormon's the only show I've seen where there's been a standing ovation in the middle of the show.
That's so cool.
After the pageant in the second act that
they do.
Yeah. I mean, the Book of Mormon is so good.
It's so good.
Yeah. So I would say that's my favorite. Probably my favorite, and then Les Mis, just because of the...
So good.
And I connect that one with my mom because she told me about it. She loved it. We went to New York. We saw it. We came out here to visit her mom, and we saw the touring production here. And then it came to San Antonio. We were like, well, I guess we're going. So we went and saw it there. Went back to New York. Saw it in New York. So it was like this... And I never didn't want to see it.
Yeah.
It was always great. Like, of course, yes, we'll see it again.
Can I make a recommendation?
Yeah.
That I recommend Les Mis fans all check out Ragtime, because it's good and bad in all the same ways.
Okay,
of like
cool.
Every song is epic and also kind of stupid. The show has the Forrest Gump problem of like, how are all these people here?
Yeah, that's fair. I think I figured out my two favorites.
What do you got?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so one is Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, it's so great.
Which I've never seen the stage production, though, but I grew up listening to the record of the
movie with, the, like, Rick Moranis?
No, of the Broadway
cast. Oh, sure.
Cast. So, like, that is so important
Ellen
to me.
Ellen Green in that show, who plays Audrey,
yeah.
That is one of, like, the great musical theater
She's
performances.
It's incredible.
I was in it in high school.
Were you?
I played the dentist.
You played the... Did you?
I played the dentist.
That's pretty cool. That
and
was always very especially important.
It.
My dad's a dentist, so it was very...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I never knew that about
it.
You.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Look at these. No cavities.
They're fake.
No, they're not.
I'm going to have to...
They're not. They're my teeth.
I might need to go see him, because it's been a while.
He's great. He's a really good... If anybody wants to go see him. But my favorite experience was going to see Rent, because it was my sister and I got to go to New York for a weekend together for this family thing. But we went and this... I was like 18 or 19,
yeah.
Got to go see Rent with the, I think, original New York...
Oh,
whatever.
Wow. That legendary.
Yeah, and it was like so special and so cool, and it was so fun.
I was just on another Campfire Media podcast.
Yes, Everything is Rent.
Everything is Rent. Yeah.
So I was on it, and I explained that I don't much care for that show.
Yeah.
But,
no.
However,
that's why I said the experience of it, of going versus like Little Shop of Horrors, the music, and all of the other ones that I said before too are so good.
Rent, I think too, is one of those musicals that gets people into musicals.
Yeah.
That it's like, oh, this is a story that I recognize and can see myself. That has some bearing to the real world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that is a gateway musical for a lot of people.
And I I was going back through my phone because I didn't watch the live one. I watched the last 10 minutes of the live one. And I was like, what songs do I still have on my phone from Rent? And it's just Take Me or Leave Me.
Yeah, fine.
That's it. I deleted
great song,
every other song.
That's a great song.
Just the one song I like to sing along to, and that's it.
Deeply funny to me that they couldn't broadcast it live because somebody broke their foot.
Crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this live show, they had to air the dress rehearsal because one of the guy playing Roger broke his foot before the show.
Oh, my God.
Talk to Beth and Sarah about it. They were there.
That's how it goes. Oh, my God, that's right. They were there.
Everything is Rent, another Campfire Media.
I think that this discussion about what's your favorite musical probably elicits in every most conversations, people have their favorites, and then when somebody else says their own favorite, everyone goes, I love that
yes,
one too.
Yes, it's so hard to separate.
Yeah. A musical theater by and large is a deeply positive place.
Yeah.
There isn't a lot of, though I just did it, there isn't a lot of it's not very good.
Well, I would like to ask, what musical, if someone said that was their favorite musical, would you make a face at?
Yeah.
Or a masturbation motion?
Okay, so, I mean, frequently, Rent is cited, and as I've said, I don't much care for it, but I get why it's a favorite musical for a lot of people. I mean, I think I'd have to say Cats. It's come up already, but, what the fuck is that show?
Go onto YouTube and watch it, because it is so... It's so funny to watch on YouTube.
If somebody says Cats, I know that's the only musical they've ever seen. That's that's you, then you know what? We can talk about something else. We don't have to. You're just humoring me to talk about musicals.
And so they're in that conversation. They're never going, oh, I love that one too, because their only reference is just Cats.
They only have Cats.
Is it like Cats?
The Cats is pretty rough.
That's.
Do you have one that you go like? I guess I've never seen a real of all the successful musicals, I've never seen one that is, except for I guess the soccer one. It was called It's a Beautiful Game.
Oh boy! Oh no!
Perfect title.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many musicals that you really only hear about ones that are any good at all.
That's true. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know.
Did either of you ever see Miss Saigon?
No.
I've never seen Miss Guy. And that was one that, speaking of my dad, bringing it back to that, that was a hugely important show to him. Because, he like everyone his age, got fucked up by the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, but would always talk about the helicopter landing on stage.
Yeah, that was the big set piece. Yeah, yeah.
I believe that was written by the same people that wrote
Les Mis. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was their second, that was the one they did right after Les Mis.
Is it similarly,
I haven't seen it.
Browsing.
I think a lot of people said they were like, oh, we get these guys' tricks.
Yeah.
Because it was, that's what I remember. And there's also the complications now of the culture appropriation.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. That's
what's
one
his
that's,
face playing.
That's why I can think of, like, a lot of these, I'm sure, are so problematic now.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ Superstar. It's like, as we you know, there's Jew. No parts for women, and there's they really chew on the word Jew. Assassins, one of my favorite shows. They remounted it, and it was coming up right after 9/11, and they added a song saying like, it's, we know these guys are bad, because so much of the show is like, maybe these guys aren't so bad.
Oh.
And right before the end of it, there's an honestly not very good song about like, hey. We get it too. It's fine, but yeah, it gets problematic.
At the end, they have like FBI agents standing up and shooting all the assassins. Just like, yes,
good. You see, we understand.
All right, let's finish with how we normally do. With what did we learn today? I learned that your dad was a dentist.
Yes, I really like that line of, I wrote it down, religion is bad, church is good. It's the gist, that's something I struggle with and I think about a ton.
I learned how important musicals can be when you get to them as kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talking about people's favorite shows don't stay the ones that they appreciated when they were kids, but that first, like,
feeling
introduction to theater and musical theater is so valuable for a person who will go on to be into it. I assume there are people that don't like musicals, but I don't care for them.
Yeah, neither do we.
Neither do we.
Good.
You can find Grant on, well, why don't you tell us about the show and how to watch it?
Yeah, you can check me out on a new show coming to Dropout, which is a subscription service from College Humor, where I'm a writer and performer, called Total Forgiveness. Ali Beardsley, who's a good friend of mine, and I both have massive student debts. Again, I went to NYU. massive student debt. And every episode, we give each other a dare in exchange for a student loan payment from the company. Every week, the money goes up, and the dares get stupider and crazier.
And it's their new subscription service, right?
Is that
College Humor?
Yeah, College Humor has a subscription service. You can get it for $5-ish a month. There's tons of fun stuff on there.
I love that they give wiggle room on the cost.
Yeah.
The honest truth is I don't know exactly how much it is. I get it for free, guys. Sorry about it.
And also on Twitter at, I think I'm doing this by memory, at Grant OB.
That's right.
Yeah.
Grant O'Brien was taken when I got there, so I did Grant OB.
Followed by women and gynecologists everywhere?
What?
No? OB?
Oh,
great.
Sorry. Okay. No, just me?
Oh, I thought...
Any other women here?
I thought it was about how there weren't any women
mom?
On the show.
Oh, no.
Mom? Where's mom? Mom? Who is she?
OB. My mom and I have the same OB. So there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I learned another thing. Grant, thank you so much for
thank
joining
Thank you guys so much for having
thank
me. This was so much fun. I really appreciate it. This was a blast.
Bye, everyone.
Bye,
right?
Everyone. Yes.
Do we say anything at the end?
I don't know. We can.
Amen.
Oh, this has been lovely.
Hey, Jesus Christ Superstar. It is finished.
It is finished. I'm so thirsty. Thanks for listening to This Particular Album is Very, Very Important to Me. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at This Particular Album. Follow us on Twitter at Particular Album. The show is produced by me, Deborah Tarica, Ryan Middledorf, and everyone at Campfire Media. Artwork by James Mulholland. Music by me, Joel Spence. See you next time.
Campfire.